It's Thursday, September 20th, 2012. This is the Hermetic Hour. I'm your host, Pope Runyon. And tonight we'll have a special guest, Frater Osiris, Magister of the Georgia Hermitage of the Church of Hermetic Sciences. And we'll recap the exciting magical weekend of festivities and initiatory rites held at the secluded estate of Frater Osiris and Soror Isis in the wooded hills north of Atlanta. The Festival of Seven Gates was performed Saturday evening in a beautiful garden setting by torchlight in a presentation that the visitors from Rivendell had to admit was more impressive than our last California presentation. On Sunday, Frater Fabian and Soror Zandria, and that's myself and my engineer over here, assisted by Frater Osiris and Soror Isis, initiated the entire cast of associate members into the active fold of the church in the Nestorius Rite of Craterapola. Thus, we fully established the encampment as a hermitage of the church. Now, the entire weekend was wonderfully and graciously hosted and skillfully organized and coordinated by Frater Osiris and Soror Isis. Associate members from other nearby states made the trip to be initiated. Morning Glory Hermitage in Henge is now the southeastern hub of CHSOTA activity. So, as we said, tune in and we'll exchange impressions of what was truly a magical event. And now, I'm not exaggerating when I say it was. This was almost like a dream. It was like a dream come true. Everything about it went very, very smoothly. And even that. Atlanta Airport, which, as most of you know who have ever flown through it, going from one flight to another was about like taking a 20-mile hike. But they have improved. They've even improved that. They now have a sort of a little monorail that runs around and takes you from gate to gate. You still have about half a mile, but at least it. So that was fairly pleasant, but oh gosh, everything about the trip and this beautiful home that Frater Osiris and the Soror Isis have up in Cumming, Georgia, which is a very upscale suburb in the woods. I mean, it really is. You're right in the middle of a forest and hills and. Their estate, calling it a estate is no exaggeration because it's a beautiful home set way back in an acre of ground, and it reminds me, because I grew up during World War II for 3 years, just about 50 miles south of Cumming. In a little area, which we visited, by the way, called Avondale Estates. And so I'm quite familiar with the area, or at least I'm familiar with it as it was back in the 1940s. And North Georgia is almost mountainous. You're in the foothills of the Appalachians. And this is real, real southern, old southern hospitality and graciousness, and Isis and Frater Osiris have an absolutely beautiful home, beautifully furnished, beautifully decorated, and a wonderful garden, landscape garden in the back where they have the henge, and the henge is a work of art. Their henge has to knit symbols on top of the menhirs and with the planetary symbols all the way around, all in white. And it's just really, really beautiful. You can see some of the pictures of it on the website. And it's a landscape garden setting. It's just magnificent. So we got there, of course, on Friday, and then on Saturday we had Saturday evening we had the seasonal by Torchlight, and we had Predator Service, are you on yet? So you got anytime you want to call in, go ahead and call in here. So we had pretty close to 20. Yeah, yeah. Michael, are
hey
you there?
Hey there, Magister Davion. Hey there, Soros Andrea. Good to hear you behind the electronic curtains of the Hermetic Hour. How are you this fine evening?
Well, we're really, really looking forward to a great show, and we just give them the background on your place and our trip out there, and we were just about to start to describe the Saturday evening festivities, the Seven Gates ceremony. So I'll let you take over from there, and kind of tell us about the ceremony and your contribution to it with the Psychic Center thing. I think that was just brilliant. I gave you, remember I told you, I said we've been activating those Psychic Centers with Ball, so use your imagination there and work that out the way you want to, and oh boy, you really did. So tell us about all this, will you?
Okay, fantastic. And it's just fabulous that you all had a great time here, and of course, the biggest pleasure for us is having our visiting dignitaries come out and participate with us and really make it all happen. There's so much to
you
talk
made
about.
It,
and
you made it happen. You made it happen. We just came along and witnessed it. Well, we did a little on the initiation, of course, but on the, as far as the seasonal is concerned, all I did was just read the prologue, and I just did that because I felt like maybe that ought to be something that would be suitable for me to do,
yeah.
And that was all. But other than that, you did the whole thing, describe it and tell us about it.
Okay. Well, I think you're actually making the point that I want to make, right off. I mean, we can talk about how fabulous and what a triumph it was, and it was. But, first and foremost, it's a collective triumph of the associate member program. And I really want to point that out. I mean, it's us here on the ground. It's you, as the elder and the voice and promulgator of the teachings, and it's Soros Andrea. Putting it together technically, and everybody working together, a collective triumph and a testament to the quality of the members that the associate member program is attracting. We know from magic, right, like attracts like, and it's the virtue of the program that is drawing together good people with good teachings that we can demonstrate this kind of excellence and experience this kind of joy. And it really strikes me first and foremost as a magical operation. It's a truism: virtuosity begins virtually, and that's the nature of the electronic heart of the program that we're working with, is that we're making the order of Astarte's temple increasingly real and manifested, not only here in the Southeast USA but all over the country. And that's the hallmarks of successful magic, and it's also the gift of friends to friends, sacred players, holy initiates, neo-pagan, goddess-worshipping, Solomonic magic that we're all giving to each other. And I'm making that point right away because if you're out there and you recently participated in the Festival of the Seven Gates, if you were initiated as a pastophorus of the order on Sunday, if you helped pleasurably inaugurate the order's work dome, of the newest operating hermitage in the order, then call in and share the air. So there's my preamble because I want to give a shout out to all the new initiates: Frater Osiris, Soror Isis, Frater Galen, Soror Lorena, Frater Adonis, Soror Aphrodite, Frater Office, Frater Heimdall, Frater Tubal-Cain, and, you know, the unforgettable Frater Shannon, you know, as well as Lady Lilith, and those festival players also that were there that really initiated the current, even if you couldn't yet become past the Four Eye, our portal guardians Lou, Inda, and, of course, our fallen Frater Mote, now under the ground and dead, but for a short time. And yes, and I'm very glad that you did enjoy the innovations, because the innovations to the Seven Gates, which turns out is not an innovation, that in fact is part of unpublished work that you're doing and that we apparently picked up on in the wavelength to open the psychic centers and the energy centers of the ball's body, of God's body, through the goddess Astarte and all the celebrants. And that was a lot of fun for everyone. We wanted to make that interactive for everybody there. I mean, of course, it has to be. And the way we did that, of course, was with the roses of the Master Caduceus ritual, that we made some special talismans and put them on the tenitra on top of the hinge on the inside. And every time the goddess would open one of the macrocosmic gates of the planets as she's coming down through the spheres, you know, down to Earth to meet her lover, then she would also go into the microcosm and awaken, you know, one of the psychic centers on the body of the fallen god. And, you know, that's what's bringing the god back to life. And so, yeah, that was absolutely a lot of fun to open that up on Saturday night with that.
Frater Osiris, one of the things that I want to mention that I was really, really impressed with, and it warmed my, it really warmed my heart, is that when we first, I and Nelson and Cheryl and Cheryl Christensen when we first started the OTA back in 1969, at that time, the Solar Lodge, bless their hearts, bless their hearts in one way, and then they were bad boys in another, but still, they had really gotten themselves in a lot of trouble, and so the going thing at that time in the Los Angeles area was Wicca. Wicca was really coming up, and the goddess worship Farfaria was established, and the pagan movement was the goddess centered pagan movement was just getting started, and it was just getting started, but it was strong. And mm-hmm. and what we wanted to do when we got started, I had that my inspiration and all that, but which was supernatural. But still, what we wanted to do was we wanted to bring the ceremonial magic tradition and the pagan tradition together. We wanted to create a fusion. That's what we wanted to do. We wanted to have the best of ceremonial magic and the best of paganism and the shamanic elements and the visionary elements and get, you know, kind of cut through a lot of this old Victorian theosophic bric-a-brac and get to the roots of this and combine it and have something that was really old and traditional and yet still had that new wave of paganism, new expression of earth religion, get it together, bring it together. And that's what we tried to do. And that's one of the reasons why we were able to keep the LTA alive for years and years and years, because we had as many people in the LTA that were pagans, mm-hmm. essentially, as we did people who were really coming from a ceremonial magic position. And then as we got into Masonry, we found out we had the Masons were attracted to it because of Solomon and the Solomonic tradition, and then And then the pagans were attracted to it because of Astarte and Baal and the pagan aspects of it. And I noticed that there in Georgia, many of the people that were there were also involved in Wicca. And we're also, bless their hearts, they're also involved in a particular kind of Wicca that I happen to be a member of this year, the 1734 tradition. And so that's it's just really, it seems it's almost deja vu. It's like you're doing the same thing there that we did way back in the early 70s.
And I think,
bringing these elements together. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I think that's no accident, that's synchronicity and fate in action. And I would just point out, in magic, syncretism is no sin. It's a virtue, right? The heart and the essence of magical law is sympathy and correspondence. And when you have any kind of magical tradition that can no longer sympathize and correspond with the others, then it becomes separated, and I think is destined eventually for desiccation and to lose the vital stream. But what we're doing here, I see it as correct. It's when all of these things are in correspondence and sympathy, that they can be in touch with they can bring the universal and the particular together to make the mysteries of the one thing happen, and so it has to be perfectly compatible with Wicca and perfectly compatible with ceremonial magic, whether you're from the Servants of the Light or the Golden Dawn or any other tradition and the Masons, that it should help open the eyes, which is the way of initiation, and make connections between the paths, to be a true center of union. And I think that's what you cottoned on to back in 69 and have been making live ever since. And it takes a while, I think, to kind of come to that realization. When you do, it's a real eye-opener.
Well,
and
I think this
that's
is
what
one
we
of the reason. Yeah, I think this is one of the reasons why we were very, very lucky and fortunate, and I think inspired to stumble our way into the Crata Rafoa tradition. And the great thing about Crata Rafoa for what we're talking about here is that it's besides being 100 years older than the Golden Dawn cipher manuscript or the OTO, Crata Rafoa was a scholarly attempt by German esoteric Masons back in 1770. Well, they probably started it around 1765 or something like that, to try to recreate an Alexandrian mystery school of about the turn of the, about the beginning of the common era. And the great thing about that is that that's when all of these threads, all of these different traditions came together in Alexandria. And from Alexandria, what we now know as Christianity, what we remember as Gnosticism, what we know as the Kabbalah, all of these aspects of the Western tradition were formulated in that matrix there, and the center of that matrix, of course, was the great university and library in Alexandria, and so the Crata Rafoa being a reconstruction of an Alexandrian initiatory system fits perfectly with this ultimate synthesis that we're trying to achieve.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, and I would be interested to hear what if there are people out there that are listening that were part of the Festival of the Seven Gates and also experienced the which is very Canaanite, of course, and the Path to Forest initiation of the Crata Rapoa with that central reading from the Corpus Hermeticum and that very Alexandrian, very celestial and cerebral kind of feel. I mean, I'd be interested to hear them call in and see what they thought of the two of them together, and what kind of differences there were and what they experienced, because they do work together beautifully, even though the wavelength in many cases is rather different.
Well, it is in one sense and not in another. Now, one of the things that I pointed out to some of our members, and I don't know whether correct in pointing this out or not, but I thought I would try, that the Order of 1734, Roy Bauer's Celtic, well, it's kind of Celtic or English Celtic witchcraft tradition derived from Graves, the White Goddess. Actually, there is a considerable Alexandrian element in that, and
mm-hmm.
and you have the god Tubal-Cain is also our Kusur and Kassus in the Canaanite tradition, and the Tubal-Cain in masonry, and the Tubal-Cain mm-hmm. in the Bible, and Bowers is a romantic extrapolation and primarily based on the White Goddess, but what you find in the White Goddess is all through is a mixture, and that Robert Graves calls it one, of these earlier biblical traditions. And as you know, our great anthropological masterworks that we use as an inspiration was Jesse Weston's From Ritual to Romance. And that's one of the big three, like Margaret Murray's God of the Witches, Graves, the White Goddess, and Jesse Weston's From Ritual to Romance. And then, of course, you can add to that Frazier's Golden Bough and whatever. But the idea here is that these traditions are all interwoven. And they not only are they interwoven, they deserve to be interwoven, and they should be. There shouldn't be a we have to bring all this back together, and I think that's what we're doing, and that Pastoforus initiation, it's the alchemy of the seasons, and
mm-hmm.
and we replicate the alchemy of the seasons. So it isn't it's. It's somewhat solar in the sense that we go around the seasonal round, and that makes it solar. But then the crater is a celestial aspect, but very definitely linked to the seasons and linked to the alchemy of the seasons. Now, could you tell us a little bit about the henge and how you build it, and what your plan was, and
tell
us a little bit about Morning Glory Henge,
okay.
I'm sure we're all kind of curious about it.
Okay, well, I mean, certainly the clear outer reason of why we call it Morning Glory Henge is if you look at the Gate of Men, we've got a special garden gate that goes into this circular garden in the back, and it's crawling with Morning Glory vines. Especially on the right side, and there's moonflowers as well, which have the green heart-shaped leaves, which I love, and they just seem to be an appropriate symbol for the love of nature, and so hence Morning Glory. Now there's some shamanic secrets, I guess you could say, to the Morning Glory that we don't necessarily have to go into on the air. That have probably just as much to do with why I'm very attracted to calling this the Morning Glory Henge. But and of course, then it alludes to the dawn and awakening, because they bloom, right with the sun in the morning. And but yeah, the form that we use, I mean, you guys have perfected your minors, the uprights of the henge, through many years of practice. And you know, you started with very substantial forms that have a very ancient feel, you know, made out of the railroad ties from Fred Adams, and you know, have moved you know, quite sensibly to very portable upright poles and portable holes to use for your menors. And you know, I do you know, without going off harmony with the wavelength, you know, I do like to add my own grace notes when I make magical equipment. And so Elizabeth and I, we thought about it, said, you know, we want to make this our own, and you know, let's try to make something, you know, slightly more substantial, kind of taking a nod back toward Fred Adams. And you know, what can we do differently? Well, how about the symbol of the order, the Tenitra? And I'm not sure how many listeners, not everyone may understand, you know, the or be able to picture in their mind the Tenitra. Now, that, you know, we know in the Goetia, you know, one of the symbols that's etched upon the vessel of brass, you know, looks like a female worshiper in a robe with her hands up, and you know, at the same time also looks like the full moon and the two half moons. And we said, wow, that would make, you know, the minor top kind of look.
Watch out! Now you're starting to. Okay. You're starting to talk about second degree symbolism.
Okay.
Yeah. Yep. No, but the Tenitrum is a beautiful symbol, and it's a perfect goddess symbol, because you have it really incorporates all the lunar goddess symbolism. And I tell you about that. When we were putting together the Canaanite seasonal ceremonies, the ancient Canaanites, just like the Babylonians, they had a moon god primarily, because you know, they were night people, and they didn't like the sun very much because it was too hot in the daytime. So they were night people. So they had a moon god instead of the moon god had a wife. Yarik, the moon god, had a wife, Nikal, but she was kind of just, you know, all she did was kind of keep house for Yarik. So we decided that we needed a really powerful moon goddess. And so we went over to the Phoenician colony of Carthage, and they had a really powerful moon goddess, and that was Tanit. And she had this symbol, and this symbol of Tenitra. So we figured, we need a powerful moon goddess, so that's it. So we'll just have, seeing as how we're updating, you know, we're bringing Canaanite religion on up through the centuries, we just figured that they would have had Tenet anyway. You know, they would have taken Tenet. So Tenet's a very powerful moon goddess, and so that's where that comes from.
Okay, fantastic. And it also practically seemed like a good opportunity, just with the shape of it, that you know, you had hinted, let's bring in the arcanum of the flashing colors from the Golden Dawn, which works spectacularly outdoors in the henge, and upon the hems of their robes, it's a perfect place to display that, you know, with a ground and a flash. Very beautifully, and you know, and a picture is worth a thousand words. And so, if you're an associate member, or you become an associate member, then you'll see lots of pictures of how that's done and how that actually works out. And it does look.
I thought it was magnificent. I really that Ange is a masterpiece. We gotta level it up a little bit, but then that's a solvable
in the work
problem.
Yep.
Yeah. But you know what, we those of you out there who want to do something a little less intimidating, a little less intimidating architecture and engineering, but you might want to go for what we have right now is with the grape stakes and you put the plywood tops on the grape stakes, and you know you don't even need portable holes. My gosh, you can just drill holes through the grape stake and then put eye bolts in there and then just drive rebar down. That'll work. It's not. One of the things, you know, Frederick Cyrus, I think that you and I, Frederick Heracles over in Austin, we love to build stuff. I mean, we just love to. Your altar is a masterpiece, and your temple indoors is beautiful, and we love to build stuff, but it doesn't have to be as elaborate as the stuff we build, and it still can look nice. And what we need to do is we need to help people to make some of this what we do and do so elaborately and so beautifully, and help them do it, make it simpler. So we kind of intimidate people with all of this. That's true, but it's a wonderful intimidation, I'll tell you. Now, I would like, tell us about how you laid that tile indoors. I mean, I thought the tile in that indoor temple of yours is just magnificent. I would tell us about that.
Well, thanks. And just so you know, we may actually make another one.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll probably make a bigger one.
Are you going to tile a garage?
Or there's actually a place in the basement. We've actually kind of worked some things around so that there's a bigger place in the basement that goes out into the garden, out with the pond and the bridge and the lotuses. Yeah, laying tile is not hard, and as far as the Hermitage is concerned, you know, I'm glad that you mentioned that. You know, I like to make beautiful stuff, but it's not about the stuff. I do want people to come down and share with us and enjoy, you know, what we have here to do the work. But the Henge, of course, and the Hermitage is really going to be about sharing the order knowledge and so that everyone has, you know, what they need and the amount of tools that they need so that we can operate, on a coven model and a regional model successfully. And I think that's what we're doing really well with that, especially through the associate member program and how that's bringing things together. So, definitely we do have. That's probably our most romantic big plan for the Hermitage, is we're getting all excited about resurrecting the temple, and whether it's this beautiful temple where we inaugurated the Hermitage on Monday, or if we make something special, in a even more suitable room downstairs, that's probably kind of the most romantic and kind of fun part is putting that together and thinking, oh yeah, I'm going to use, the exact shade of blue that they use on the Fox Theater ceiling in downtown Atlanta. I'll have kind of some lighting, and I'm going to put a special star, a seven-pointed star, on the ground.
I remember that. I remember that theater from when I was a kid.
Yeah.
I think I saw Bambi. I saw Bambi there when I was about 8 years old, but just for a moment, you mentioned Coven model, and just recently I heard that somebody heard me use that term and said, "Oh, what does this mean? The Coven model, you know, and whatever," and they were kind of. Didn't quite understand what we meant by that, and I think maybe we need to explain that. When we first started out in the OTA, we first started on what you might call the Covenant model. What is that? Do it in your own home. That's what that means. That's literally when we call it the Covenant model. That's what we're talking about. We're not talking about how you have to have 13 and people and you have to call yourselves Wicca or anything like that. No, we're just saying the Covenant model is you meet and have your ceremonies indoor and outdoor in your own home on your own grounds. So that's what it means. Now, when we first started out, we just thought we had to have a permanent church kind of facility. We just thought, oh boy, we got to have that, and we did. And for a while, we did, and in Pasadena, but we couldn't afford it, and we didn't want to charge the most of our members were mostly college kids, and we didn't want to charge them a lot of money so to keep the place. So I just decided, hey, that magic just doesn't work very well in a church. In a church type facility, because if you have a church type facility, you almost have to make it pay for itself, and this means that you end up offering something other than magic. You end up literally offering more of a church type program, and we didn't want to do that. We wanted to have magic. We wanted to have the mystery and the magic and to be able to have the adventure. And so we found that it is best to operate, no matter how elaborately you do it, it's best to do it in your own home. And the magister and his high priestess they have what the Wiccans call the Covenstead, and what we call the Hermitage, they have it and they hold it and that's where the ceremonies and the rituals and the initiations take place. That's what it means. That's what a covenant model means. And this way, we don't have to depend upon getting money from our members. We can do this just to cover expenses and do it as a labor of love.
Absolutely.
And and that gives us a tremendous power, because how can a thing like this fail? In other words, it doesn't have any the weaknesses that a church has. And it can shrink down to just, or it can expand. It operates on its own merit. It doesn't have to sell it. It doesn't have to, we don't have to sell anything. And so it gives us, I remember Gordon Melton used to send out all these questionnaires all the time to all the pagan groups. What are your finances? And he'd go through this questionnaire. The whole questionnaire was where do we get our money? And I kept telling him, I said, Gordy, we don't do it the way your Christian churches do. We're not out to get money out of people. And finally, he realized that. Yeah, so that's the strength, really the strength that we have. How you and Elizabeth both got into this, and you got a little bit of your background and some of what went on before you discovered CHSOTA.
Oh my goodness. Okay. Well, I had just gotten out of the Army here in the area, down on the south side of town. And, magic is a calling, and, you know, I've been called to it all my life, and I finally decided, well, I don't need to do anything right away. I think I'm just going to see if this stuff can work. And so, well, the first thing I did, I have always been a temple builder, is I had a kind of a ghetto apartment that was very large, and turned that into a personal temple. I wasn't really aware of other people kind of doing this kind of stuff. And but I did meet Elizabeth. She was a reader and an astrologer in a shop, and originally brought her over as my Pythia, to be a visionary, and married my Cirrus. So, and that was quite some time ago. I mean, I guess and this comes down to being a householder tradition, and so it's possible. I have been in and amongst kind of the community the whole time, without necessarily being terribly social about it. And it was, after getting past a certain point in one of my initiations, it's one of our initiations, that I really just wanted to come up out of the basement where we had been doing our magic alone, and kind of come up to the great outdoors and to the greater universe. And then at the same time, that's when you guys started opening up in the for the program, and I realized, hey, this is the guy I've been kind of watching this whole time. I've been kind of had my eye on Magister Thabion for some time, because I realized, I built this altar and it was half white and half black. And look, he's got the same thing, and there was just a lot of similarities. And I realized, at that point that we kind of thought alike, and I think that's kind of where a lot of people are at. I'm pretty sure that's Frater Office, that he's kind of coming from the same place, a lot of these guys are realizing this, a lot of these ladies, I guess that's how's that for sharing a little bit about that?
That's about. By the way, while we're on the subject of your background and all of that, your better half, Soror Isis Elizabeth, has written and gotten out a beautiful magical novel. At least, and it's the first book of what's going to be a. I don't think it's a trade. Is it a trilogy or is it a duology? I think it's a, but it's called Dolphin Gate, and that's dolphin like a porpoise, Dolphin Gate, and it's about a previous about her. I mean, it's just, you can see a lot of Elizabeth in it, especially from what you've just told me. And her previous incarnation in Atlantis, it's a kind of a murder mystery and an occult thriller, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. And it's on Amazon and on Kindle, and I really think that everybody, all the associate members, ought to look for it and bring it in, because for three reasons. Number one, it's a heck of a good read. That's number one. Number two, Elizabeth is really a psychic. And one of the things that you get in this book, you really get inside the head of a psychic. And a lot of people think that psychic detectives, and that's what she is in this book, that a psychic detective has some sort of superpowers. Well, that's really not exactly what it's all about. I mean, Elizabeth really gives you the inside track on what it's like to be a real psychic detective, and her knowledge of occultism is obvious. And so this is an insider's book, but it's written in a very, very professional style, and so I really want to recommend it. It's called Dolphin Gate. It's on Amazon on Kindle. And are you planning to write something yourself? You got something in the works, maybe?
Nothing I can share yet, but yes. We'll save that for a time when I have something I can actually talk about. But yeah, there will come a time, I think, when I'm going to share something. But
that quote you came up with, that beautiful quote you came up with, that I should write this down. Oh, I never did write it down exactly where you said it, but I said that quote should rank with Lon Duquette's. It's all in your head, but you have no idea how big your head is. And what was that quote? That wonderful quote of yours.
Okay, well, we'll just call this the operating mantra of Frater Osiris to survive a 3-day magical weekend, and that would be to be fantastic in the face of reality, realistic in the face of fantasy, and as compassionate as my capacity allows. And yep.
Oh boy, that is really good. That's one we're going to remember. But I definitely want you to use that and do something for the next seventh ray, definitely.
Yeah. And I wanted to mention too, you know, while we're on the subject of, you know, really what this amounts to is the Bardic Circle that we were talking, you know, that, you know, after the Festival of Seven Gates and even after the Pass to Forest, when we're sharing our works of creativity afterwards, which is really you know, a gift, the gift of magic, just as magic is the gift of creativity. That you know, that Elizabeth had a chance to share about Dolphin Gate, and we all got to really enjoy your movie trailer, Black Wolf. Now, so I want to mention that everybody raved about. It's 11 minutes long, and we all got to see that. And I don't know if the trailer's out on YouTube yet, but if it is,
yeah,
you should definitely.
No, it's not.
Okay. It's not out there yet.
In fact, I just dropped it off. I just dropped it off at the vendors to have a number of copies made of it with the, you know, with the logo on imprinted on the disc, which we need. And it's strictly for promotion. We can't sell it. It's strictly for promotional purposes. It's the beginning of a 4-hour film, a major motion picture, and we have. We have Ed Asner starring as the old Cossack colonel, who is the patriarch of a very, very, very dysfunctional family.
Yeah.
I mean, a very dysfunctional family, and you can tell if they, when they start getting dysfunctional, their eyes turn yellow. So it's Baron Black Wolf, Dogs of God. We will have a website. I'm sure Andrea is working on a website right now. So we won't have it on YouTube until it's up on the website for a while. But that will be coming up shortly. But,
and I wanted to say to the listeners that when you get a chance to be promoted, right, you know, when you get a chance to experience the, you know, the promotion of the Black Wolf, take it. It's absolutely enjoyable. You know, from the kids on up, it's, you know, especially when you get a little bit of the backstory of how this is woven of historical thread,
yeah.
You know, all pieced together, you know, of, you know, actual werewolf families in the 20th century and havoc that they caused on the historical stage. We all love it.
You can thank Kevin Connor for that, because, you know, I got to admit, I'm too much of a ham to do a good direction. But he being a real good professional, I mean, real with a long, long track record, he did Frankenstein for Hallmark. That's one of the best Frankensteins I've ever seen. I mean, it beat Kenneth Branagh's hands down. And Kevin knows how to get really subtle reactions. And he got Ed and those boys to, you know, you can see, you know, the way it was edited and the way it was put together. Now Kevin really knows how to direct a movie. And, of course, you know, comparing that I can say on Beyond Lemuria, I didn't direct that. I can blame that on Greg, but still, you know, we're a little heavy-handed, and so that Black Wolf is very, very nice and subtle, and, you know, high production value. Anyway, but that's that's stop the subject we're talking about. You know, that's not our subject of tonight. Tell us about upcoming activities and,
okay.
and programs that you're going to have there at the Hermitage, and yeah, let's talk about that.
Yep, and yeah, and so that's the aftermath we are engaged in now. So the first thing is we're going to establish some cycles of activity, a weekly cycle for training and review opportunities in the Arcanum of the Order. You know, from the Pearl exercise, the Hermetic Caduceus, you know, basics of pentagram and hexagram rites, and try and divide it out by the grades that we are working here and now, being the associate level, the past the forest level, and the second the chorus a little bit, and you know, the invocations and the path workings. And so we'll have a weekly hour,
yeah.
And that'll be for and so that you know. So if you're in the Southeast region, you know, we're going to be doing that. And this has been an established pattern around here that we have a study hour around Sunday at 1:20 in the afternoon, and then also to try to set up a kind of a dedicated opportunity for monthly moon magic. And since so many of the dedicated members, you know, have obligations if they have covens that they're part of for new moon and full moon, it's going to be the first Saturday after the new moon. So it'll put it somewhere in the first waxing quarter. And that schedule will be there, you know, although you can figure that out, so that we have an opportunity to do some operations of some kind. And of course, and then there's a quarterly cycle that's more solar, and that's for the seasonal celebrations. And all of those, you know, we're going to set up the backbone for this, Frater Osiris and Soror Isis. But, you know, again, you know, this is a collective exercise. I mean, this is a chance to demonstrate excellence of good people and good teachings coming together. And, you know, so we, you know, we welcome and are looking for your help and contribution to come and provide some of that with us. You know, say, hey, you know, Frater Office, if you're out there, you know, perhaps one of these times you might want to demonstrate one of your Picatrix talismans as, you know, a special event for the group. Well, we'd love that. And so this is, you know, so we'll have all kinds of opportunities for people to get together, because that was really one of the joys of the event is meeting people in the flesh that we've seen online through the Associate Member Program from all over the Southeast. You know, we've had Frater Shannon from Nashville, Frater Office from Birmingham, Alabama, you know, Frater Hemdel, you know, coming down from the North Carolina, and of course, and then all of us, Frater Tubalcain, everybody else locally here in Georgia, and being able to come together. But I think with a schedule of that kind, we're going to find some opportunities to get together and make this thing happen. So, I mean, that's some of the plan. So that's the scheduling plan as far as that goes. And and we'll take it from there.
Well, it sounds like you got a good working plan going, and of course, you know, we will be supporting you 100% and getting material out to you. You're going to want to, of course, run at least one path working for each. You know, we've got those path workings on DVD, as you know, Zandria was beating me about the head and ears earlier about, oh, why do we have to charge $25 a donation for the pathway? Well, we do, because we spent a bloody fortune making the darn thing, and we're never going to get that to pay for itself. But at least we would like to get a $25 donation, and we'll pay the postage. But the good thing, that's the bad news. But the good news is, you don't have to prove to me that you've done all your lessons. That's too much bureaucracy. We'll just, you know, you should do all your lessons before you do the pathway. Just put it that way. But you're an associate member in good standing. Go ahead and order, you know. And, of course, if you're not an associate member, we'll know it. So it's only associate members. And send us your $25 check or money order, and we'll send you the pathway keys. But, Frater Osiris, you as a lodge master, you really, I said in the booklet in there, that at least you ought to do one path working, you know, yourself with them, with your students. And that's good. You know, I still kind of think that it's best you've got the direct contact with your students. And there's that hypnotic, shared hypnotic state, being right there and sharing it with them is important.
That's in the work, is our larger mirror that's going to hang from the ceiling of the temple. And so this is where, you know, we got to talk about, well, that's one of the reasons that we're all excited to put together our temple, so that we can have, our nice blazing star on the ground, and we'll set up the magic circle and suspend the mirror as an altar, and we can all get in a ground star formation. And we've done it. We've done something very similar. Haven't done that with the mirror, but I know from what we have done that that's going to be fantastic and should be experienced in a group. That trance work is great. The DVD, which I can attest to, definitely works, because I've been privileged to get an advanced copy by a little bit. But I'm really looking forward to when we all get together and do some of these path workings together.
Well, and, you're right. You're right about that, because we're trying, you know, we're trying to do something, trying to teach something that's very much like a martial art, and trying to do it over the internet. And I don't know, you know, we're trying. We're really trying. But how do you teach? How do you give somebody a black belt over the internet? I mean, really, the hands-on, just at a certain point, hands-on instruction is just, in magic especially, it's the yoga and magic. You know, you need a guru. You gotta have a guru, and Soror Isis, you're a pair of gurus, and I'm really, we're all very, very fortunate that we have this active and very well qualified hermitage established east of the Mississippi there, and you know, it's just, like I said, it's a hub. It's just like Atlanta. Atlanta is one of the biggest international airports in the world. It's a hub, and you're a hub. You're a hub now for the Church of the Hermetic Sciences in that area. So I am really, really, we're honored, and once again that weekend was just absolutely fabulous.
We're so glad that everybody enjoyed it, and we just blame it on our Gotha Daemons, you know, that because. That are the ultimate teachers.
Is there anything else, right quick, before we wrap up? Is there anything else, right quick, that you want to announce, like websites or mailing address or anything like that you'd like to announce?
Well, there definitely is a special Yahoo group for the Hermitage, and the way I'd kind of like to work it. You know, certainly for now, and, you know, I don't necessarily foresee changing the model, is for those who are interested, join the associate member program and then, you know, make contact with us on the site. And we, you know, because we've got that great site and all the energy and the synergy there established, where everybody's able to share in a very free-form way on the hermetics.ming.com. Site, which is for the associate members, and then from there, when you're ready to come into an actual working group, we can pull you in from there and put you in touch with the Yahoo group. I'll put it that way. That's the way that, that we're going to work it. Now, I mean, I can announce the address, but we'll probably just bounce you that direction first. But it's Morning Glory Henge OTA, all separated by underscores, and that's the Yahoo group. So if you go to, if you know where to find Yahoo groups, it's Morning Glory Henge OTA.
That sounds good. Now, I'm going to, right before sending off here, next week we're going to start a new program here. Next week's Hermetic Hour is going to be a rerun of the first Hermetic Hour we presented back in 2010. And what we're going to do is, in order to get all of you folks through, because we do this as an instruction, as a sequential instruction. So we're going to have the first, and then we're going to have the following week we'll have a live show, and then we're going to do the second one, and the following week we'll have a live show. And we're going to do this in order to get you new listeners through the original program, so you get all these shows, so we don't just keep rerunning these topics. And we'll march you right through the whole program, because these are set up like instructional. They're set up like instructional lectures, like you're going to college. And I don't mean to be, they're not that boring, but I mean, that's the way they're set up. So we're going to start next week. You can start off with the first introductory episode of the Hermetic Hour, and then the following week we'll have a live one, and then the next week we'll have another, the second one, and so on. And meanwhile, take care, be well, and good magic.
Good magic.